Let's jump right in. We're gonna go right to the scriptures and read those and put them up on the screen for you. We're in the middle of this series called The Seven Great I Ams, and we're talking about these in John's Gospel. And we're going to start in John chapter 10, verse 11 through 18. It says, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. He who is a hired hand and not a shepherd, who does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees, and the wolf snatches them and scatters them. He flees because he's a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me, just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father. And I lay down my life for the sheep. And I have other sheep that are not of this fold. I must bring them also, and they will listen to my voice. So there will be one flock, one shepherd. For this reason, the Father loves me, because I lay down my life, that I may take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down, and I have authority to take it up again. This charge I have received from my Father. So, just as a reminder, John is kind of hijacking the gods of Asia Minor, confronting the Greek and Roman core belief system. And their belief system is based on what God in the pantheon of gods, what God can meet my need, my immediate need. So like today, I'm sick. What God is going to meet my need if I were a Greco-Roman citizen? Which temple should I go to and which altar should I offer a sacrifice at to get well, so that I can do my job and take care of my family, right? People would look to these different gods in their pantheon to provide those types of things, okay? So we've looked at three gods so far, and we're right in the middle, because there's seven great I Am statements, and today is the fourth one, so we're right in the middle. We talked about Demeter, Apollo, and Janus, okay? And he takes these three I Am statements, and he directly looks at these gods and he kind of knocks them over like bowling pins. And he says, you think your God can do this, Jesus can do that. You think this God can do this, Jesus can do that. He never says Jesus kind of does it all better. He just takes each one and he says, my God can do all of these things. You only have one God for each little thing. My God can do all of these things. And then the statements that he makes are, I am the bread of life. All right. I am the light of the world. I am the door we talked about last week, and today he talks about I am the good shepherd. So, by the way, I walked in sick and late, so I'm just going to pause for a moment. Gail, welcome back. Gail's been working through cancer, and I'm so happy you're here. That makes my day. That makes my day. So, we could do what we've been doing the last couple of weeks, where we look at this God, and there is a God that has to do with I am the good shepherd. You may have heard about this God. His name is Pan. How many of you ever heard of Pan? It's where we get the idea of pan flutes, because he's like this satyr type God. He's half goat, half man. Kind of like, this is not a depiction of him. This is Tumnus from The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. But he's based on that God, okay? Pan was the god of herding and shepherding, and that was very important in their time because their whole agricultural system was based off of herding and shepherding and crops. And so he's the god who makes sure that those things are flourishing. But I want to do something else this morning, and what I want to do is, it's super interesting to study the gods of Asia Minor, but I want to ask us today, because we're right in the middle, it's a good practice to kind of zoom back to today and go, what are the gods of our world today? And we don't think about them in terms of gods, but there are things that we bow down to. There are things that we get distracted by that take our focus off of the one true God, that take our focus off of Jesus. I mean, all of you are aware of this. There are things that consume our hearts and our minds, okay? It's really easy to go back 2,000 years to the Greco-Roman world, to that empire, to the gods back then, and kind of go, oh yeah, it's cool to look at all of that, because they had all this stuff. And basically what we would call those gods is idols, right? They have all these idols. It's really easy to just put it all back then and go, we don't have idols, right? But we do have idols. And so I want to examine that today. The question is, what do those gods back then look like in my life now? What are their equivalents right now in our lives? What are the equivalents? In case you weren't doing that in the last three teachings that we did throughout the month, that's what the overarching question we're asking. What are the equivalents of those ancient gods in our lives now? We have this, we just kind of explain it away and think that, well, that's back then, and we don't really examine our hearts now to find out what idols are we worshiping. So I want to talk about this statement today, I am the good shepherd, and what does that mean? In order to do that, you have to go back and talk about the statement that we talked about last week, which is, I am the door, because in the same little section that we just read, he says, I'm the door and I'm the good shepherd. The door statement and the shepherd statement are bound together. They are intertwined. They are all tied together in one concept. Jesus is using an image that's very, very familiar to his original Jewish audience, okay? So, shepherds, for instance, you have this flock of, let's say, 50 to 100 sheep, and you are going throughout the countryside, and your flock is just mowing everything down. My kids and I like to watch Shaun the Sheep. That's a British kind of claymation, stop-and-go animation series that's animated, if you haven't seen it. And one of the things that always happens is the sheep are just grazing, and they have this goat that gets loose, and it just, like, mows down everything. And it's really funny. But imagine you have 100 sheep. This is why places like Google, instead of like wherever their land is for their offices, they hire a shepherd with his sheep and just let them graze all over their countryside to keep the grass down, because it's cheaper to let the sheep do it than to pay a bunch of guys with lawn mowing equipment to go by and do this. They can just decimate an entire area really quickly. So, imagine you're a shepherd with your whole flock, and you have to keep this flock on the move because it will just eat everything in sight in a particular area, and they have to keep it moving. So you're going from point A to point B to point C to point D, and there's other shepherds around with their flocks, and you're all trying to, like, avoid each other. But to get to point A to point B, you would cover a lot of distance. So you'd be trying to get to one place, and you would roll up to a sheepfold, which was like a gated or stone-walled area, and you would put your sheep in there for the night, okay? So two or three flocks could be put in there, and you might be going, why would I put my flock of sheep in with this other flock of sheep? Well, back then, and even today, Bedouins in the Near East, they train their sheep by voice. They train them by voice, meaning the sheep herder, the shepherd, goes before the sheep, and he has certain calls and a certain voice where the sheep will obey it. So back then, this is an ancient practice. They would do the same thing, and you can see this today if you go to the Middle East and you watch Bedouins herding their sheep. We saw this in Ethiopia in 2007 when my wife and I went there. We watched a little girl who had been trained to shepherd her family's flock. There was like 30 sheep following her around. And they were following her, and she would just use certain little noises and calls, and the sheep would do whatever she wanted. There were no horses herding them. There were no border collies keeping the sheep at bay. It's all by voice, okay? And so you could put two or three flocks of sheep with two or three shepherds putting all their sheep into one sheepfold. And in the morning when it's time to go, all that shepherd has to do is say, come on, guys. Come on, sheep. Whatever the call is. And just that shepherd's sheep will come. And the rest will stay put. They will only follow their shepherd's voice. Some of you are tracking with me already. You've seen where I'm going with this. You have a shepherd's voice, okay? Everything was done by voice. Jesus says, my sheep know my voice. My sheep know my voice. They don't know any other voice. They follow no other voice. If it's not my voice, what do? They flee. So when we read of this, we think of wolves trying to jump the pen and take the sheep or something like that, or a robber trying to jump over the wall into the sheepfold and try and hoist the sheep out. I don't know if you've ever been close up to a big old sheep. But that's going to take some doing to get a sheep over a wall. But John is telling us this parable about Jesus, and Jesus is telling us that there are deeper realities here. When he's referring to thieves and robbers, what we should be thinking of are, what are the voices in our current culture, in our context, that are trying to lure you away, kind of to your doom, to your destruction? What are the things that are calling to you that are either trying to distract you from Jesus or just completely take you away from your devotion to God, and they're trying to lead you astray? Maybe we could illustrate it this way. I want to put up a diagram that one of my mentors uses. He used to be an executive director of a college campus ministry program all over the United States, and he would share this frequently, having to do with college students. But it's basically like there's two different stories that are told in the world. The first story is called the good life. So let's put that up there. It's the good life. The good life can kind of be equated with the American dream, if you will, which is very much alive and strong. And the American, you know, the good life is basically this. We start it with our kids. When we send our kids to school, what do we say to them? Get good. What was that? How did you all know that? Did somebody tell you that? Did somebody tell you that story? Were you kind of indoctrinated with that? Let's put the arrow up there and the first word, grades. Okay? So you need to get good grades, right? You need to get grades. Why? So you can go to... Wow, how did you know that? Let's put that up there. Yeah. Uh-huh. You got to go to college because why? You have to get a good income, job, career. Okay. But not just any job, right? A particular kind of job. A good one that pays you well and has what?
Benefits.
Yeah. You guys are amazing. I didn't know you knew this story already. It's pretty awesome. Yeah, it has to pay you with enough benefits like high pay and retirement and insurance. Why is all this important? So that you can have the good life. Security. Yeah, so that you can have security. Let's put the next one up there. Yeah, that's story A. Okay? It's amazing how well all of us knew story A, right? We know that story really well. If we follow Jesus, however, if you've been following Jesus for a while, then you get a different story. You are confronted with story B, the story of the gospel. He has just said, I've come to give you life, abundant life, right? If you go back to the beginning of John chapter 10. And we're not so sure what to do with this story. Let's put up the abundant life and the arrow. It's a little harder to map. If I'm going to ask you what comes next, you're not going to be as sure, I don't think. But we're somewhat familiar with it if we follow Jesus for some time. We might start with something like, what was Jesus' life all about? Love, right? Let's put that up there. I think we would start there. If you look at the overarching narrative of Jesus' life, what he came to do, what he did do, how he conquered death, who he hung out with, the practices that he engaged in and taught, the things that he said. Ultimately, it's about love, his love, the Father's love, love of other people. We love, as scriptures say, because he first loved us. It starts and ends with love. It all hangs on love. All right? So I think we would also say it has to do with justice. I'm going to put these things up here just so that you don't feel awkward when I ask them and you don't know what comes next. But I will tell you this, that if you go to Matthew 5, 6, 7, 8, and you look at the Sermon on the Mount and the things that Jesus is saying, he is describing the abundant life. And it doesn't look exactly like story A up above it. Justice, the Hebrew word mishpat, putting things in their appropriate place, the way God intended them for them to be. When we talk about the word resurrection and redemption in the New Testament, we're talking about bringing order to chaos, because our lives are full of chaos and the world is full of chaos. Things have fallen, quote, end quote. We want to bring peace, shalom, to the disorder of the world. That's what Jesus was all about. It's about his mercy. Let's put up the next couple there. It's about his mercy. How does mercy fit into the good life? Mercy. The good life is about me doing what I need to do to make sure I'm taken care of so that I can feel safe and sound and secure. But mercy, I mean, if you go back and look at the Beatitudes, he says, happy and blessed are those who mourn. How is, really, Jesus' life looks a little bit different. Happy and blessed are those who are merciful. Where does that fit on the good life story? The abundant life is also about generosity. Let's put that up there. Generosity and hospitality. By the way, those are two of our core practices, rhythms and practices that we have established as a church. Generosity and hospitality, which means giving of yourself, taking care of the outsider, welcoming in the stranger and the alien and the orphan and the widow. How does that fit in the good life? See, if you start with the good life, you might say you want to do those things in the abundant life, but you'll try to make sure that you have the good life first. And that's not really in the equation for Jesus. It's not really in the equation. I mean, you want to have the abundant life. Jesus says, practice forgiveness. Forgiveness. That's not even on the good life thing. It's not even on that story. Practice forgiveness. Show mercy. Be faithful. Practice righteousness. The word in Hebrew is tzedakah, righteousness. You want to have the abundant life? Jesus says, I can tell you how to really live. You know this because you read stories in the news weekly about people who, quote unquote, have the good life, but they squander it in many different ways. They are not happy. They are never satisfied. They're always looking for another person to bring them that satisfaction. And another person cannot bring you that ultimate, deeper satisfaction. They're always looking for a bigger, better score in life, whatever that is. And it does not satisfy. It does not do the job. And Jesus says, you want to know how to have abundant life? Live like me. Some of you are going, I know where he's going with this. He's saying, I can't have both, but I can have both, right? And the answer is no, you can't have both. The two stories cannot be lived at the same time, and I'll tell you why. Because the first story, let's put this up on there, is based on self-preservation. Let's click a couple more times here. So there should be something that appears above the top arrow. The first story is based on self-preservation. Let's put that one more click. Yeah. If you live in story A, it's about making sure that you provide security, remember? That's why you tell your kids to get grades, so that you can go to college, so that you can get a great job, so that you better make the right decisions, so that you can have your security. That's story A. While story B is about something different, it's about self-sacrifice. About self-sacrifice. And the two, self-preservation and self-sacrifice, are diametrically opposed. This is what is behind, by the way, like every great story and every great movie that you love, where there's a hero, a true hero, you know? The hero chooses between self-preservation and self-sacrifice, right? Obi-Wan Kenobi, Star Wars, A New Hope, what does he do right at the end? Self-sacrifice, right? Right? Avengers, Endgame. Spoiler alert. If you haven't seen it, it's your fault. One of the heroes sacrifices himself at the end. In fact, more than one. Oh, I didn't tell you who. You can crucify me later. Okay. This is what makes good storytelling. But it's based on the hero of heroes, Jesus Christ, the King of all heroes, who models this for us and gives up his life for everyone. Self-sacrifice. Right? Story A means I'm going to make my decisions based on preserving myself. And I want to make sure you get this. Like, the things on the side, grades, college, career, benefits, security, those things are not the problem. Those things are okay in and of themselves. They are not evil. Is that crystal clear? Getting good grades is not evil. Going to college is not evil. Having a good job is not evil. Are you with me? Those things are not bad. I personally like the fact that I have a job. Right? Yeah, I'm sure you do too. The components aren't evil, but the whole thing wrapped together, the good life, pursuing story A, that can become an idol. That can become an idol. For example, my job, I view it as a gift of God. It's a gift from Jesus. Fundamentally, in Scripture, if you go back to the Scriptures that Jesus called Scriptures, your Old Testament, in Deuteronomy 8 is very instructive. Just write that in your notes. Deuteronomy 8. You can read it later. Basically says, do not forget the Lord your God, for it's He who gives you the ability to do everything that you do. He gives it to you. It's a blessing and a gift so that you can do the things you do for His kingdom, for His glory. Everything that you do and everything that you have. In other words, Jesus gave you your job. Jesus gave you your career. And that is diametrically opposed to story A that says, I gave me my job. I gave me my career. Yeah, I think you did had a part in it. I had a part in my grades, you know, especially when I got that D plus in chemistry. It made me change my career from pre-med to ministry. I was just much better at reading than writing. But fundamentally, Jesus is the door, is what he says. And everything that you have has to come through the door. It comes through him. And if it goes away, if your job goes away, if your security goes away, and he's your door, and he's your shepherd, if your security and the things that make you feel like life is okay and that you're safe and sound, things that, and this is really important for us, because we are not the only Christians in this time and this place, okay? We have brothers and sisters who do not have the things we have around this world. We have brothers and sisters who live in fear of being Christian and following Jesus. We have brothers and sisters who meet in underground basements and they have to sing in whispers. Where is their security? Where is our security? If everything we have that makes us secure is taken away, those things are not our bread of life. These are why these statements are really important in the time and place that John is writing. He's writing to a people who are being persecuted, who are under the rule of a foreign power. Jesus is my bread of life. Jesus is your bread of life. Your education is not the light of the world. So whether you have the highest education and you're on top of the world for that and you think that's the end all be all, or you're at the bottom and you, quote unquote, the bottom and you never went to college. Either way, don't make an idol of it, because it's not the light of the world. Jesus is your light of the world. Jesus is the door. He can take your education and bring it through himself. And if you follow Jesus, he can use that, right? He can use it. But it's not Jesus and my education. It's just Jesus. It's just Jesus. And it's hard if we're truly wrestling with this, because this is our idolatry, okay? Whether it's your job or your grades or whatever. What I want you to know is this. We have the exact same gods We have the exact same gods as they did in Asia Minor 2,000 years ago. We have the exact same gods. We've just changed their names. Following me? Okay. The ancients had Zeus, and they had Demeter, and they had Apollo, and they had Aphrodite, and it goes on and on. Janus, Pan. We have salaries and houses and cars, 401ks. And I need to have these things in my refrigerator and these things stocked on my shelf and no debt on my credit card. And I have to have this kind of car. And I'm not slamming anybody for being in a certain field or for having those things, okay? Or who uses the stuff that we have. But what I'm talking about is we need to pray about none of those things becoming our gods. Those things will not save us. Those things will not bring us security. Because those things aren't the bread of life. Right? They are not the light of the world. The good life is about self-preservation because it's built upon the bottom line there, fear and worry and anxiety. And anytime you turn on the TV or you open the newspaper or you open up your news app on your device, and it's most of the stories that you read there, especially geared towards us in America, are based on fear, worry, and anxiety about our security in this life. Truth, right? Doesn't matter what side of the line you are on politically, or if you're in the middle, right? Doesn't matter. Does not matter. Both sides prey upon your worry and your anxiety and your fear. Both sides do. Who has your allegiance? A party line or Jesus? You need to have a bigger perspective and a broader scope. That 2,000 years ago, there was a different political system in which Christians were living in. And there was the same kind of garbage going on. And John is saying, who is your Savior? Who will you follow? What voice will you listen to? Listen to Jesus' voice. The good life is about fear and worry and anxiety. And I have to preserve this way of life, because if I don't, I might lose everything. What does this do? If you live that way, it robs you of your generosity. It robs you of the things that are in the abundant life. If you live story A, you are robbed of the things that are in story B. Those are Jesus' words. The thief and the robber come to break in and steal. If I don't have enough, that's the repeating mantra in your head in the good life. I don't have enough. And it filters down into the way you view yourself and your identity as well. You have to post things online and in social media to make the world know that you have enough or that you're cool enough. Almost everything we talk about in here goes back to all the internal turmoil you had in middle school and the popularity contests and stuff like that. Who gives you your identity and where are you going to place your allegiance? Do you have security in Jesus and the identity that he gives you that you can stand up to every other thing that wants to place a label on you and say, no, I'm good. I've got Jesus. You know? But not in the abundant life. Jesus says, be generous, be hospitable. No matter where you fall on the financial spectrum, if you have a lot or a little, be generous, be hospitable. It forces us to look at how deep our idolatry runs when we look at the way Jesus defines the abundant life. So your security does not rest in your education or your grades or your degree or your job or your retirement. Those things are the wolves that try to break into the sheepfold and sneak over the wall, and they try to kill you and steal the abundant life. They are trying to lure you away with a different voice. But as Christians, our security rests in Jesus. Our security rests in loving Jesus. How? With all your heart, with all your mind, with all your soul, with all your strength. That's where your security lies. The abundant life is modeled after Jesus' self-sacrifice, and it's built on trust and the freedom that he gives us. Because if I trust in the abundant life, all the things on the top become kind of, I hold them lightly. They are good. They are good if I hold them lightly and let Jesus act upon them through me. They become fluid. I don't clutch to them as if they are my savior. I don't hoard them to myself. My career, I can lose it. I can lose it. And I know that I have a good shepherd whose voice I can still hear. Where's he going to lead me? He's going to lead me to green pasture. He is the light of the world. He is the bread of life. He is the door. He is the good shepherd. All those things on the good life list can be, you can cast them into shadow. You can cast them into doubt when they aren't going well. You worry when they aren't going well. But if you're living the abundant life, that other story, those things can go south and it's going to be okay, right? Because you're still walking in the light. So here's what concerns me. Jesus says, those who are my sheep, they know my voice. They will follow no other because they know the voice of the shepherd. Here's my worry. My worry is, how well did we know story A? How well did we fill in the blanks? Would you say we did a really terrible job? Would you say we did pretty good? Or did we did excellent? We did excellent. That's my worry. That we did really good at the top one. If we do really good at the top one, it begs the question, which voice do we know better? Which voice do we know better? Do we have an idolatry problem? See, the gods of our world are all about self-security. We think far too often that it's my grades, my work, my decisions, my situation, my education, my career. I got a raise. Really? You got one? Really? Or did God give it to you? Did God give it to you? Why did you really think you did it when just because you were born here and you've got this stuff and we have Christian brothers and sisters in another country who don't have that and they're working hard, they should be getting the same thing, right? We have a bigger, broader perspective, a bigger scope that we need to look at this through. The idolatry of our culture is this lie of security. And once I have security, I have to protect that. Because if I don't protect that, then I won't feel safe. I won't feel saved. Basically, I'm here to tell you today that your security lies in one place alone. And that is in the person of Jesus Christ. He is it. He's our Savior. And that brings trust and that brings freedom. If you want proof that story B is the abundant life, it is the story of Jesus. We remember this when we come to the table. He said that through this meal we are to remember who he was and what he did and how he did it. It's pretty clear. We think it's clear when Jesus says, I'm the good shepherd, what he means by that. Or do we really know what he means by that? N.T. Wright gives us a good explanation. I'll put this up here. He says, in the Bible, the picture of the shepherd with his sheep is frequently used to refer to the king and his people. In the modern world, we don't think of rulers and leaders in quite the same way, right? So when you think of the president of any country, you think of them as a shepherd, right? That's what he's saying. No, we don't think of them as a shepherd at all. Doesn't matter who it is, in what era it is. We don't think of JFK or even Lincoln or Washington or anyone as a shepherd, right? But they did back then. We think of people running big companies, of the presidents of banks and transnational corporations. We think of people sitting behind desks, dictating letters or chairing meetings. Often such people are quite removed from most of those who work in the organization. They seldom see them face to face and probably don't know the names of very many. But in the Bible, the ideal king is pictured as a shepherd, perhaps modeled after the shepherd boy David, who became the king after God's own heart. In a world where they knew about the intimate contact and trust between shepherd and sheep, this was their preferred way of talking about kingship. This is the image that Jesus chooses to explain his own claim to be the true king of Israel. Jesus has in mind various leaders in his own lifetime, some whom we might call revolutionary leaders or warlords, or the house of Herod, which was eager to submit to Rome as long as that meant keeping their own power and wealth. Jesus is posing the question, how will you tell God's true appointed king when he comes? The answer is that you could tell the true king the same way you can tell the true shepherd. Anybody can turn up and give himself airs as a leader, but only the one who comes by the way God has appointed has the right to do so. Anyone can call followers, but the sign of the real king is the response that comes from the heart when people hear his voice and love and trust him and follow him. And Jesus has just reminded us in this passage, he calls himself the door of the sheep. And the meaning might not be immediately clear. This is why the shepherd and the door statements are tied together. It may not be immediately clear unless you know a bit about first century shepherding. We've already learned about the voice, right? But I haven't told you about the sheepfold. Let's put up the picture. This is how what they looked like. Sometimes they were much bigger than this. You see the ring of stone, a big wall. Sheep are pretty big. They're not usually going to jump over that. You would put all the sheep in there. And what the shepherd would do, and this will become really clear in a minute, the shepherd would sit down in that gap. You see that gap? The shepherd would sit down in that gap and sleep right there all night long. So it is too hard for a thief to jump the wall and try to pitch sheep over the wall. Plus, it's really noisy. You're going to get caught. The most common way a thief is going to try to steal the sheep is to do what? Kill the shepherd. Attack the shepherd. And the shepherd has to protect the flock. So the shepherd sits down in the doorway. Not only that, the shepherd is the door. So when he says, I am the door, and I am the shepherd, and they are thinking, shepherd king, and this shepherd says he's going to lay down his life for his sheep, this is a massive, massive statement for us, is it not? This is what the true king really does for us. This is what the Savior really does. He put himself between the sheep and any potential danger. If a thief wants to steal and kill and destroy, because the thief's voice should not work to lure the sheep out, right? The thief has to go through the shepherd. And Jesus emphasizes this message. It's not just for the Jewish nation. Where I grew up in Arizona, there was a lot of LDS people living there. I had friends that I grew up with, many friends that were LDS. And they would look at this voice this scripture in verse 16 that says, I have other sheep, and they would always highlight this on commercials we'd see on TV and say, I have other sheep. Well, and they would say it meant like Joseph Smith and a bunch of people back in the United States centuries later. It has nothing to do with that if you look at the context. Zero to do with that. The context is Jesus is looking at the Jewish nation and he's saying, you were supposed to be a light for the world and every other nation around you. And now in and through Jesus, if you live my way, you will be a light to the world, to the Gentiles, My other sheep are those that are outside of this nation of Israel that come to know and love and trust the voice of Jesus and give their life to him. So he says, I must bring them also, and they will listen. They will listen to my voice. So there will be one flock, one shepherd. So the protection and the pasture that Jesus offers to those who follow him are not just for one select group. That was a big deal for them to understand back then. It's not just for the people who grew up in church, the Israelites, if you will. It's for everyone. The Messiah is in the business of growing his flock. Okay? All you have to do, says Jesus, is you have to hear my voice. If you hear my voice, please join the fold, is what he says. Please join the flock. And that, my friends, is really good news. That's really good news. So Jesus walked in trust and in freedom with the Father to give everything he had to help anybody and everybody who has need. All the things that try to give you security instead of Jesus, they don't come through the door. If they come through the door, they're really going to have to fight hard. But you need to understand that if they're jumping the wall or you're hearing another voice, metaphorically here, the things from story A, they are coming to kill you, to rob you, and to steal abundant life from you. They really are. Carl read for us Ezekiel 34, and I'm going to read that again. It is the passage that I think John has in mind when he's writing this story about Jesus. It says this, "For this is what the sovereign Lord says, I myself will search for my sheep and look after them. As a shepherd looks after his scattered flock when he's with them, so I will look after my sheep. I will rescue them from all the places where they were scattered on the days of clouds and darkness. I will bring them out from the nations and gather them from the countries, and I will bring them into their own land. I will pasture them on the mountains of Israel, in the ravines and in all the settlements in the land. I will tend them in good pasture, and the mountain heights of Israel will be their grazing land. They will lie down in good grazing land, and there they will feed in a rich pasture on the mountains of Israel. I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord. I will search for the lost and bring back the strays, and I will bind up the injured and strengthen the weak. But the sleek and strong I will destroy." I do believe that's a reference to the Pharisees. "I will shepherd the flock with justice." So the proof about story B is that Jesus, the good shepherd, the true king of our lives, he puts his life in harm's way for us as the door. He says, I'm willing to sacrifice myself for us. That is a good shepherd. That is a good king. The one that puts himself, who lies down in harm's way to save us. He will give up everything. And he says, I'm doing this so that you can have abundant life. Abundant life literally translates into living like him. Living like him. So as the band comes, we're gonna take communion here in a minute. I want to leave you with some questions here, like I always try to do. The first one is this: which story do you trust? You can grab for all those other things in story A and just make them your life and your idol like a lot of people do. But is it going to give you security? Will your boss or your job or any other relationship lay down its life for you and give its life for you so that you can have safety and security? See, that story A is all about where you have to make it on your own. You have to make it on your own. By your own devices. All alone. Or are you going to trust the story of the Good Shepherd? He knows exactly what you need when you need it. He says, I'm going to bring you into green pasture. I'm going to take care of you. All you have to do is follow my voice, is what he says. So which story do you trust? The second one is, What gods do you struggle with serving? You kind of need to name it and claim it. You need to know in your life, what are the other voices that are trying to get your attention? If you name them, if you share them with other people that you trust so that you can get help, then those voices will fade away. And you will hear your master's voice, your shepherd's voice more clearly. How often are you struggling with a voice that's all about your security and your safety, the need to preserve and protect and do it on your own rather than what Jesus can really give you? That's what's behind that question. What gods do you struggle with serving? The last one it's kind of like a no-brainer, right? And it's simply this. Do you want the abundant life? You want a life where you have a shepherd who, no matter what comes, is willing to lay down his life for you. Do you want that kind of abundant life? It means mercy and justice and righteousness in your life to the point where you may lay down your life. The abundant life. Jesus is the good shepherd. He is the light of the world. He is the door. He is the bread of life. It's not Jesus and this. It's not Jesus and hard work or Jesus and good behavior or Jesus and your job. It's just Jesus. That's the abundant life. That's the abundant life. It's just Jesus. It's just Jesus. I pray that you would follow his voice.